This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Good morning, horse people. This is Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for November 14th, 2013, episode 788. Today, I'm going to share with you a couple of the episodes of some of the new shows on the Horse Radio Network. First up, you will hear the latest episode of Horsemanship Radio, hosted by a good friend of ours and Monty Roberts' daughter, Debbie Laux. You will hear this morning Olympic dressage rider Charlotte Bradal and Joe Camp, creator of the Benji movie, speak on good horsemanship. And Debbie answers a question regarding issues crossing water. I hope you enjoy that. And immediately after that, we have the latest episode of Blaze Kids Radio for you. You say you're not a kid? It doesn't matter. This is a fun, entertaining show I think you will enjoy. Debbie from Gentle Carousel Miniature Therapy Horses tells us about her amazing therapy minis, and another round of Horses in the News, Did You Know, and Carly with the story of Lady Fair. I think you'll enjoy that if you haven't given it a chance before either one of these. Stay tuned and just give them a try. We think you'll love them. It is Thursday, so that means you only have one day left to surf the web for classifieds and Craigslist ads that are really crappy. And email them to jennifer@horseradionetwork.com with bad ads in the subject line. On tomorrow's live show, like we do every Friday, Jamie and I will read the ads and hopefully pick out two that are the funniest of the batch. It's the favorite part of the show for everybody that listens. We always have higher ratings on Friday than any other day, and people look forward to 10 o'clock a.m. Eastern Time for really bad ads here on Horses in the Morning. And the winners this week will win one of two prizes: an original poster and gift-wrapped whimsical note cards from Canter Lane Design. Canter Lane Design offers interior design services along with inspired assortment of home decor items to infuse your spaces with all things equestrian. For equestrian inspiration with style and flair, visit Canter Lane online at canterlanedesign.com or follow Shelley at Canter Lane Design on Facebook. From Horse Grooming Solutions, a grooming tote filled with products valued at over $100. When you need gentle, effective, economical products for your daily or show grooming needs, look no further than Horse Grooming Solutions, the brands that you've come to know and love. Healthy Hair Care, voted the number one horse health brand by consumers, Silverado Show Grooming, and Old Timers Equine. You can find them all at your local tack and feed supplier or online at horsegroomingsolutions.com. Now sit back and enjoy two of the most exciting new shows on the Horse Radio Network. See you tomorrow morning, everybody.
This is episode 3 of Horsemanship Radio, brought to you by Index Fund Advisors, IFA.com, matching people with portfolios. Horsemanship Radio is part of the family of Horse Radio Network. Today we have Charlotte Bradal, Olympic bronze medalist in dressage, and Joe Camp, producer of the Benji movies and author of The Soul of a Horse. They are here to give us their views on horsemanship today. Thank you for supporting our sponsors that make this show possible. This is Debbie Laux, and you're listening to Horsemanship Radio. I have my producer, Glenn the Geek, here with me today.
Hey.
Welcome back. Yeah, thanks, Glenn. Welcome back, everybody. Horsemanship Radio airs on the 15th and 30th of the month. Glenn, can you tell us all the ways that the listeners can find the shows?
Yeah, sure. We're still waiting at this point for Horsemanship Radio. It has been submitted for the app, the Horse Radio Network app, so you'll be able to listen to it on iOS or Android phones or your iPad through the application. That's actually the best way to listen to the Horse Radio Network shows. You just go to the App Store, either iOS or Android, and search for Horse Radio Network, and you'll see Horsemanship Radio on there very soon. So it'll be on the app here very shortly. We'll let you know. Probably by the next episode, you'll be on there, Debbie. And of course, you can always listen to the show by going to horsemanshipradio.com or horseradionetwork.com, either one. And you can listen to the show on your computer. And a lot of people use iTunes for things, and you just go to the podcast section of iTunes and search for Horsemanship Radio, and it is on there as well. You can subscribe there. So there's a lot of different ways to listen to our shows here on the Horse Great. Radio Network. And I have to tell you, Debbie, we got some response to the first real episode that we did here, and people are loving it.
Good. Is that right?
Yeah.
Wonderful.
People
Good.
Are loving
Have to
it.
Tell their friends.
I think there was a real gap missing in our program here at the Horse Radio Network with horsemanship, with training issues and natural horsemanship. And I think that you're here to fill that. And so far, the response has been very good.
Well, good. I'm glad to hear that. Keep them coming, guys. Tell your friends. But today we're going to have a great show. Today we have two people on the show that love their horses. Yet, you know, they're like polar opposites on their daily routines with horses. They couldn't be much farther apart. So this is what makes horsemanship so interesting, Glenn. That's what I love about this show. Joe Camp is a lot like us. You know, he's one of those giddy up and go guys. He's on a quest to become a more responsible owner of his horses and wants us to be too, because we love our horses. So we'll hear more about Charlotte Berdahl, but after this from our index fund advisors.
Hi, I'm Mark Hebner, president of Index Fund Advisors and proud owner of Monty Roberts Willing Partners graduate, He's a Sugar Bear. You know, investment portfolios are a lot like horses. You need to find one that best suits you, your temperament, and your stage of life. Some people might like an energetic horse and an aggressive investment portfolio, while others are more comfortable with a gentle ride and a more conservative investment portfolio. The trick is to find the one that's right for you. That's what Index Fund Advisors is all about, matching people with portfolios. Risk-appropriate, low-cost, and globally diversified investment portfolios. You can find the right portfolio for you by taking the Risk Capacity Survey at ifa.com. That's IFA as an Index Fund Advisors. Or you can call us toll-free at 888-643-3133. That's 888-643-3133.
Charlotte Berdahl has trained many horses to the top level of dressage. In 1992, she was part of the bronze medal winning U.S. team at the Barcelona Olympics riding Monsieur. In 1997, she was on the silver medal winning U.S. team to the North American Championship riding Lugano. Charlotte's trained both horses from the start, and she's been a selector for both the Hong Kong and London Olympics. Presently, she's competing at Grand Prix with Strauss. For the past 25 years, Charlotte has also pursued a judge's career. And for the past 4 years, she's been an international judge. This year, she'll be helping be a judge at the international events in Australia, Japan, France, and Denmark. Charlotte Berdahl, thank you for joining us today. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Debbie?
I'm good. Thank you. I'm so excited to have you on the show today. You are the consummate horseman in my mind because, you know, we can say human. So I guess we can say horsemen. We can say horsemanship. We don't have to call it horsewomanship. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's great.
Okay. Well, this is Horsemanship Radio, and I'm really excited that we have you today because there are so many elements of horsemanship that your life is involved in. I know that you started your life in Denmark. How did you make the transition from Denmark to the U.S. in horsemanship?
Yeah. When I grew up in Denmark, I always knew that I was going to move somewhere warm because I don't like the cold very much.
Oh.
So when I had the opportunity to come over to California, it was pretty much just with suitcase in hand and a good friend that lived over here that said, come on over. And so I just came over and started knocking on doors to get a job with horses. And I was lucky enough to get a job at an equestrian center down in L.A. And at that time, it was the equestrian center in Los Angeles called Bell Canyon Equestrian Center.
Yes,
and,
yes.
I knocked on their door and they said, sure, you can work, but we can't pay you. And I said, okay.
Oh.
And so I started working, you know, 12-hour days on a regular basis, and pretty soon they started paying me.
That's nice. Yeah. You must have gotten really skinny.
Yeah, and I just worked basically as a groom, and eventually they discovered that I could ride, and then I started riding about 10 horses a day.
Goodness.
And, eventually I ended up running the place, and it was a big place with 110 horses, so I learned a lot in a very short time.
But you came here with a lot of horsemanship knowledge, too. I remember you telling me before that that you did lots of different disciplines in Denmark. I remember you talking about...
Yes, I did. I started riding when I was about 9 years old, and started cleaning stalls in exchange for riding lessons at that time. And then did that for a while, and then when I was about 12, I think, we moved to a small island because my dad got the job as a sheriff there. And then I just started knocking on all the farmers' doors and just started riding anything that I could get on. And so I rode every single day and quite a few horses.
This is your modus operandi, this knocking on doors thing, huh?
Yeah, at that time it was.
Yeah.
I don't have to do that anymore.
Well, no, not anymore at all. We heard your bio. We know what you have accomplished now. So you have always felt that it just takes work. It takes elbow grease to stay in the business and to be good in the business. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. And riding. And then the horses have taught me more than any person ever taught me, you know, because every single horse will teach you something if you listen. And and so I did the riding, and I got into jumping, I got into a little dressage, and also had a job at a farm where they had trotters. Mm-hmm. So I learned to drive trotters and actually got a license to drive on the track for one season when I was 18, just before I moved over here.
Right.
So yeah, I've done a little bit of everything.
That's good. I mean, your horse knowledge must be as deep as canyons. I can't imagine. You know, we did recently a clinic with you. We put you and Monty in a clinic we called Gentle and Elegant, which was the dressage side and how it crossed over with the Western riding side. And Dad was in his short little quarter horse, and you were in your big, tall dressage horse, your warm blood. Tell me, when did you decide? I know that Sweden, Denmark, all the Scandinavian, I mean, they always profess to be completely natural or completely gentle. But did you see, even in your youth, that there was more to learn?
Oh, I think there's always more to learn. I still feel like I have lots to learn. And I think the horses still, you know, they teach me something new every day. Every horse does. And I'm also, you know, involved with different breeds. And I think my motto is to set the horse up for success. I think that's sort of my philosophy in everything that I do with the horses. And certainly Monty has taught me, you know, different ways of doing that outside of the everyday training. And I think it was great to do the clinic with Monty, where we could really exchange a lot of ideas. And of course, over the years we have worked together quite a bit. And I think he's been great. He's just a real problem solver when I've had certain issues with horses, sort of behavior type of issues. He's been a great source of help.
Mm. Well, you're a good student and a good mentor too. I know that one of the things that you advocate, not only are you a great rider, a great competitor, but you're also now judging too, which is quite an honor in the industry of dressage. A lot of people think that dressage is very regimented and maybe even a little harsh on the horse, but I know for a fact that you're one of the most passive people in the training, the starting of a horse. My goodness, when does a horse flower in dressage? When do they really come into their own? When do you start them, and when do they come into their own?
Well, I think if you do it correctly and step by step, like you're supposed to, and really listen to the horses and when they're ready to do what, and I think they can get to the highest level at the earliest when they're 9, really, if you do it right.
That's amazing.
You know, the body is ready for all the really difficult stuff. And then it's not too hard on them because it's done really systematic and mm-hmm. and with respect for the horse all the way. But certainly some people will try to do it much quicker, and then that doesn't work out so good. And I think that's one of my responsibilities as a judge, is to always reward harmony and not reward a horse that's, you know, too tight or too anxious or nervous mm-hmm. and, you know, with a lot of tension. So mm-hmm. actually, as a judge, you can influence where the sport goes quite a lot.
Uh-huh, and very
good. That's a big responsibility that I take very seriously.
I love that. That's great. Yeah. Good statement. Tell me about, I know some of the people in our audience know about your Olympic, but accomplishments, but how did riding in the Olympics change your life?
Oh boy, it changed it on so many levels, and it still changes. I mean, it still makes a difference, actually. I think most people understand, at least to some degree, how much discipline and hard work it takes to make it to the Olympics in any sport. And I think most people really respect that. And it tells people something about your character. Mm-hmm. And because of that, I think it opens up a lot of doors and a lot of opportunities. And it also comes with the responsibility of trying to be a good role model for up-and-coming riders and trying to make a difference for as many horses as you possibly can in the training methods.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the consummate award to, I know, Joel, your husband, was that, at least he said that to me, was getting that award from the Queen at the Guards Polo in England in 2012. We all met over there and met the Queen and did our curtsy, and you look lovely. We're going to put the photo up on the website so that we can show that you were there. You're in beautiful yellow. Yeah, but how did the meeting of the Queen and that whole award ceremony, how did that affect you? I know how it affected most of us, but how did it affect you?
Well, I mean, it was an incredible experience, for sure. But I think more than anything, I think it's just great to see that someone with as much influence as the Queen uses her influence to try to change the lives for horses worldwide. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just, you know, fantastic. And I think that's something that I always want to keep in mind. And I think that's something that every trainer should keep in mind, that we all have a real, you know, huge responsibility to the horses to try to influence how the horses are treated in their training in every discipline. Mm-hmm. Because I don't think one discipline is necessarily more harsh than another, but within every discipline there are very bad trainers and very good trainers.
Mm, yeah, that's
right. It doesn't have much to do with the discipline, in my opinion. So I think that was sort of the biggest thing I took away from that, was just think about how much we can all influence mm-hmm. how the horses are treated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if you had to define natural horsemanship, what do you think of these days?
Honestly, I'm not really sure. To me, it's just all about doing everything in a compassionate, systematic way, so that the horses always understand what you're telling them, and the training is always fair, and the mm-hmm. goal is always to have a great partnership with your horse.
Yeah, good. I can't wait for people to see you on Monty's Equus Online University, because the lessons that you put up there, I think they say it all. They really do. And I know that you also mentor youth, so it's not just the warm bloods that you're mentoring out there or other students. Tell me a little bit about that, how that's in your life.
Yeah, some years ago, maybe 15 years ago, Joel and I took in a foster son when he was about 9 years old. And then a few years later, we took in another foster son. And then I got contacted by a local church program who has a mentoring program. And because they'd heard we'd taken in foster kids, they thought we should take in some more kids to mentor.
Oh.
And I ended up committing to mentoring three kids all at the same time. And at that time, they were, two of them were 6 and one was 8. And I have not been mentoring them for 12 years.
So my goodness.
18 and 20 and doing well. Unfortunately for me, none of them were into horses. So that's just how it worked out. But it's still been great to just help them in general in their in their life, because of so many of this of the you know the life lessons are the same whether you're with horses or not, hard work and discipline, et cetera, et cetera. But recently, this year, I took in a 9-year-old through the same program, and he's the first one that is totally horse crazy.
Yeah,
and so that is just really, really, really fun to be able to share all the things that we have here as far as our lifestyle with the horses and animals in general. And so that's been just a real reward for me to be able to share that. And I have a wonderful little Palomino quarter horse that is a great, great schoolmaster for this 9-year-old. So that's really, really fun. And I'm sure he's going to go very far because he'll have all the opportunities.
That's right. You do have a beautiful place there, a beautiful historic place. It must be hard to leave. What do you got coming up? What's your schedule like now going into the season?
I leave on Monday. I leave to go to Denmark, where I'm judging a big World Cup qualifier. And I'll also get to visit family. And then I go directly from that, I go to Japan for the first time, and I'll be judging a big international show there. And then I come home for a week, and a little over a week, and then I'm judging the U.S. finals in Kentucky.
Oh, terrific.
The first time we're ever having a U.S. dressage finals where everybody comes head-to-head. So that's going to be interesting.
Exciting.
And then after that, I'm home, and then I'll be back riding in full gear again, my regular 5 horses a day.
Oh, my goodness. Have you ridden already today?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All done.
That's Yeah, all done. Yeah. Good. Well, thank you so much. Yeah, you do. I know you're just amazing. I want to have you back. I would love to talk to you more about how you stay in shape and how you you cross train and do some of the things that you ask your horses to do as well to stay in shape. But for today, I really appreciate you coming and honoring us with such a storied career and giving us a little more insight on your horsemanship.
Okay. Thank you, Debbie.
Thank you, Charlotte.
Thank you.
We'll get to our interview with Joe Camp after this thank you to our sponsor, Equus Online University.
Hi, I'm Monty Roberts, and I know that I'm transforming the lives of horses globally. You can learn to do it too on my Equus Online University. There's a new lesson on there each week, all the way from join up to advanced. Watch world's champions give their lessons. Join at MontyRoberts.com. Go to my Equus Online University. You can transform your horse too.
Joe Camp, film writer, producer, director, author, passionate speaker, and the man behind the canine superstar, Benji. He wrote the best-selling book, The Soul of a Horse, in 2008. Camp has written, produced, and directed 7 theatrical motion pictures, including all of the Benji movies, cumulatively grossing well over the equivalent of $600 million in today's dollars. He's one of the most successful independent filmmakers of all time. Welcome, Joe Camp. Welcome to the show, Joe.
Hey, how you doing, Debbie? Good to see you, hear you, actually.
That's right. That's right. We're on the radio. This is exciting to have you on our Horsemanship Radio. So many people know you as the author of The Soul of a Horse, and this is a real horse-oriented audience that we have. But I know that from the bio that we introduced you with, people will now know that you are also a premier director and producer of self-made films and the Benji, the little critter that changed the world, I think, in animal movies.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible to be able to drop down on a street corner virtually anywhere in the free world and say one word and see eyes light up with this so much love and affection. It keeps me ever aware that it has been a worthwhile trip.
definitely a life changer for everybody, the Benji movies. I'd like to just focus on the horses today, but if you bring out some of the things that overlap between carnivores and flight animals, feel free to kick in there with it, because I know that most people...
We overlap with them, I know that.
Yeah, oh, your family, yeah, that's true.
Not always in the nicest way either, so...
Oh, well, you do have quite a few critters there. How many critters do you have now on your farm in Tennessee?
We have 8 horses, 6 chickens, 5 dogs, 1 cat, and 2 kids when they're not in college.
That's right. And you and your wife, Kathleen, now have made the move from Southern California to Tennessee, Bell Buckle.
Indeed.
Yeah. Happy?
Happy campers, too. It's good. It's really nice over here.
I'm glad you've really settled in. Your life changed quite a bit when Kathleen bought your first horses to fill up that barn that was just sitting there. What'd you have, a couple of stalls down there just calling to you?
Yeah, they were outside stalls in California, and actually it's your fault, or, you know, Monty's fault, the whole thing, because we'd sit out there on the porch and look down at those stalls, and the sun would set over behind the ridge, behind the stalls, and we'd be saying, you know, wouldn't it be nice if there were a couple of horses wandering around in those stalls down there, like a pretty postcard at sunset. And so after weeks and weeks of this, I guess, you know, she drug me out of bed one morning. It was the morning of my birthday, and I did recognize that and say, what's going on? And she said, just get in the car. So she drove me down the hill. We were in a little place called Valley Center in San Diego County. Drove me down the hill to this park, and we drove into the park, and there was this big horse trailer with 3 horses ready to go, saddled up, tied to the trailer. And I said, what? She said, you've been saying for some time, you know, in addition to stalls and horses, that maybe we should take a trail ride sometime and just get to know some horses. And today's the day. Happy birthday. So we took this 6-hour trail ride, and 3 weeks later we owned 3 horses. And I can promise you that a couple of empty stalls and a 6-hour trail ride is not a good reason to go out and buy 3 horses. But when we were visiting boot barn to, you know, do the obligatory trip to get all the stuff that we were going to need when these horses came to us, Kathleen picked up a California Trader.
Yeah, that's it.
Magazine, newspaper thing. There was a big article on Monty in it, and she read it to us over lunch. We went next door, or close to next door from this boot barn, and the kids were sitting there eating In-N-Outs, actually. And do miss that about California. But she was reading this whole story on money and join up and all of that. And so I went straight home and ordered the first book and the join up DVD,
mm-hmm.
which came before Cash and the other first two horses came. And so the first thing I did when those first 3 horses came, I took Cash, who's my boy, and the cover boy on Soul of a Horse, and took him down to the round pen that we had created and did a join up with him.
Yeah.
And when he, you know, I won't go into it. I know somebody has on this show at one time or another, or they can go to your website, how join up actually operates. But I did this join up with him. There comes a time when you quit acting like a predator and start, you know, being submissive and turn your back and you leave the choice to the horse, which this is all way too psychologically complex for me at that time, because we didn't know zip about horses, and we had no horses and no clue. And so when I turned my back on him and lowered my head and shoulders and all, and he walked up behind me and touched me on the shoulder and blew in my ear, I just broke down and cried.
Yeah.
And that's that moment caused by your family, is what sent us off in the directions that we went, because I suddenly was no longer a horse owner. I'd been a horse owner for a day.
Yeah.
And now I'm, you know, you keep looking for words. Everybody does. You know, what is it? A partner, a friend, this or that. And I think in Hidalgo, the first line of the movie, is when he wakes up in the camp and the horse is down sipping water out of the pond or the lake thereby, and he says, "Come on, little brother, it's time to go." Oh. And that struck me from the moment I saw that movie. He said, "That's what it is. It's the brother.
It's a little brother.
And he's my little brother." And so that's the closest I've ever got to describing what it's been like. But I promised him on that day that I would give him the best life he could possibly have. Mm. And the problem with that was that I didn't know what that was, because I had no clue. And that's what started the research and started the digging and started everything. And it started the journey that became The Soul of a Horse,
yeah.
The book, The Soul
it's
of
great
a Horse,
book.
Because that's where, you know, somewhere about halfway through that part of the journey, which of course we've now found is never ending because you're always learning. But somewhere around the middle part about this, you know, we were looking at each other saying, "Are we nuts? I mean, is there something grossly wrong here with what everybody's telling us and what seems to make sense from the research that we were doing and so forth?" Mm-hmm. And we got to, you know, either we are completely crazy or we're missing something. And, you know, as it turns out, we weren't crazy, at least clinically speaking. And it's that we were finding our way, stumbling our way to what a horse's genetics call for in the way that they live. You know, a horse, you know, we ultimately wound up out in the wild with the wild horses, and I'm asking the questions all the time, you know, these guys out here have been doing quite well for, it turns out, 52 million years, evolving in the West and building and developing the genetic system that they have. And I was being told, "Oh, forget that. You know, the wild horses and the domestic horses are no longer even the same species. We've, you know, we've bred the wild horse right out of, you know, those horses. Yeah. We've bred the feet right off of them. That's why the domestic horses have to have shoes and all of this." Mm-hmm. And, you know, what it turns out, because I finally aborted because I couldn't find the answers in the horse world, and I joined a scientific academy, and so I could get to their archives, and finally went in there and found out, you know, what it would take for, you know, just even to barely begin to change the basic genetics and of any species. It would take minimum 5,000 years, more likely 10 to 15,000 years, depending upon the circumstances. Mm. And then I stumbled onto this whole thing that you've probably read about, but the horses that were found in the Alaskan permafrost that are dated somewhere between 12 and 28,000 years ago. And they ran DNA sequencing on them, and they're less than 1.2% difference than the horses that are right out there in our pasture today. And that means that a domestic horse has exactly the same genetics, could be turned loose in the wild at any time, and will do just fine because it's built in. And anybody who, you know, who doubts that, come look at our horses' feet, which have, for 8 years now, have had no shoes on them. Come look at any foal that hits the ground, they hit the ground running.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, literally within an hour, they're on their feet, they're thinking, they're eating.
It's amazing.
And they're playing by 2 or 3 hours, and there's a reason for that, because Mother Nature and God has said, you know, we got to protect this baby from a predator.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
he's got to be on it. It's not like, you know, how long does it take humans to be on their feet and able to travel 8 to 20 miles a day? That baby can do it the second day of its life.
Yeah. Not my kids. Yeah, my kids didn't jump in there right away at all.
No. And even dogs, you know, puppies and
kitties. That's right.
And whatnot, you know, their eyes are still closed for, what, you know, 2 or 3 weeks.
That's right.
And And but no, in the case of this prey animal, that baby's got to be up, know what's going on, and ready to go. And then he's ready to go with the, you know, with the herd inside of 4 or 5 hours. And right. by the second day, literally, could travel 20 miles with that herd if he needs to.
Yeah.
And or if she needs to, in my case, recently.
Yeah, that's right. Yes,
but,
you feel that.
But so that's what really, you know, began to bring it all together, that this is, you know, and what I've come down to is literally any question that I ask, well, what about this and what about that? I change it to what would he be doing for himself if he were out in the wild?
Yeah.
And then I try to mimic it the best way we can.
This is what makes your blog, Joe, your blog is so interesting. I hope that people will jump on your website, thesoulofahorse.com, and get on your blog, because I love the fact that you come at this from the scientific and the average Joe. You're the average Joe in that you acquired horses later in life and just want to learn everything about them. You're the person we want to be to our horses, in that we want to continue to learn more and educate ourselves. I love what you have on your website about myth number one. Can you tell us a little bit? I love it. It's good.
That is. Well, I've got a whole list of them sitting right here in front of me.
There's
about
good.
Eight that I want to do, and I haven't gotten back to it. Kathleen says diversion is my middle name. I start going down this road, and I can't ever get back to the intersection of where I was.
You
but myth number one is, and I've been told this, and this is where it comes. I mean, in the very beginning, when I started saying, you know, what we're doing, this is what we're going to do. We're going to, you know, we're going to get these horses out of the stall. We're going to let them get out and move. And come to find out that movement is 99% of it, because a horse in the wild will move 8 to 20 miles a day, literally, looking for food and water and staying away from predators and all the stuff that they do. And over the years, their entire body, all their systems depend on that movement. Their digestion depends on it. The health of the feet depend on it. The health of their immune system depend on it. Their hind gut depends on it. And they're eating, you know, 18 to 20 hours a day. But so, you know, as we began to evolve into this and get, say, this is what we're going to do. Now, how do we do it? How do we get our horses out? You know, we're in Southern California and kind of the high
right.
desert. I mean, the kind of country that the horse grew up in, thankfully, because it made it a little easier when we got going with this. But, you know, we're gonna start putting them out 24/7. And I had people say, oh, I could never do that. I said, well, why is that? I said, well, I'd never see them again.
Yeah.
And I'm saying, what? And she said, no, I could never do that because I couldn't catch them. I said, catch them? Catch him? Why would you want to catch him? And she said, well, how can I ride him if I can't catch him? And, well, you know, I didn't really understand that, because we grew up with ours at liberty,
right.
coming to us by call, by name,
right.
and they do, you know, till this good day. You know, I can call any one of them. You know, one of the neatest videos we got on Soul of a Horse Channel, I think, is, and it's actually used in the book trailer for this next book that's coming out this week, actually, Born Wild, The Soul of a Horse. And the whole concept that we almost never use a halter and a lead rope, no matter what we're doing. We just call them and say, come on, walk with me. I want to go over here. They do. And we go here, we go there, and we do our thing, call them down when it's time to come down and eat or whatever. And they come off and running in a herd, which is a little scary when you see all that coming at you. But that's the concept. And when we came over here, you know, because you've got to sort them out, and we do feed in the morning and evening, but it's primarily just for supplements. You know, it's a base that we use for just putting our supplements on and so forth. And it's kind of a forced indoctrination of spending, you know, 2-3 hours with the horses every day,
mm-hmm.
with them doing stuff. Yeah. You know, and
we're jealous.
Most of the training that we do now, you know, the movement training, and you know, go here, go there, do this, do that. Is all done during that time, when we're spending that time down there with them. But to, you know, to actually put the food down, you got to take into consideration, you know, where they are in the pecking order of the herd and who eats fastest and who eats slowest and all this, so that you don't have, because we don't have any stalls. You don't own a stall. You know, we have a 100-year-old barn that had some 10-by-10 really
huge,
gross, dark, no windows, nothing.
Oh,
stuff
I
somebody
see.
Wants to use for something. But we've got to figure out how to do it, and then to pull out a halter and a lead rope, say, okay, you're going to have to come over here and get behind this panel, and you got to go over here and do this, became just, it was just kind of a pain in the rear, actually. And I'm lazy. So, you know, I said, I'm just going to teach them to walk with me. And sure enough, I did. And, and they do.
Yeah, we call that ambitiously lazy, though. So you've got lots of things that you accomplish, but it's because you don't want to do it with tools. Is that Benji in the background?
That one actually is Skilo. I stepped outside because the groomer is here right now, actually, and she's going to come inside in a minute, want to check. So I was going to step out here to try to write this check, and there's a dog's outside too, because the dogs, when anybody comes in, they just go crazy.
That's okay. They want their spa day too. The groomer's there, but
That's myth number one: is that your horse would never, you know, would never come to you, and you would never be able to catch your horse if you start right. And that's my whole thing till this day, you know, 7-8 years later, is you start with relationship first, and when you start with relationship first, by the horse's choice, not by you taking it, you've got to let the horse have the choice to say, I trust you to be my leader. And when that happens, everything changes. And that's the problem with most people who say their horses, they would never see him again, because the horse doesn't want to be there. The horse doesn't enjoy being there. And there's been some studies done. In fact, I sent you one time about that subject and the fact that, you know, 10, 15 years later, when somebody's been away from a horse and comes back and they had, you know, they had begun right with the relationship first, and the horse looked to them as a good and trusting person, the horse absolutely remembers that, and they can pick up like it was yesterday, right where they were. And the same is true with somebody who's not nice to the horse. And so my mantra, my number one tips these days are, start with that relationship first. Give the horse the choice. You cannot take it from the horse. You've got to let the horse have the choice. And when the horse makes that choice, in whatever form you do it, you know, you can do it and join up, or I call join up without a round pen. It's kind of like what Monty was doing out with the Shy Boy in the wild, except, as I said, I'm lazy. So we call no agenda time, where Kathleen and I just sit down in the paddock with a new horse, as we did with our new Mustangs with Saffron, and sat there for 35 days in the evenings, just frankly having a little glass of wine and talking about the day and ignoring the horse completely, until that horse decided, and 35 days later she decided on her own that she wanted in, and she flipped the switch. And I've seen it work in various forms with join up and this and that with all the horses, but there's always increments involved. You know, I've never seen anybody just completely flip a switch like this. And she did. And I mean, she was all of a sudden all over me, and I couldn't touch her 1 minute, and the next minute I could do anything I wanted. Could rub her, play with her ears, pick up her feet, anything. It was just the most amazing thing I've ever seen. And like I said before, I'm lazy. So this is a good message to me, because I just ignore her for 35 days, and then she does it on her own. But, and her baby is, you know, we Dr. Millered her baby. You know, we did
his, very good.
His whole thing. She was in my lap the second day And I had my finger in her mouth the first about 4 hours after she was born. And, you know, so, and she's great, but we have let her deal with all of her crazy training, you know, like tarps, using tarps. We just wadded one up, stuck it in the middle of the round pen, and it's a pass-through. The round pen is set up so that horses use it as a way to get to the barn and whatnot. And baby, and Mouse is this way too, thanks to Monty. The Mouse will drag that tarp all the way, and they get it and play with it together and pull on it. Ah. You know, it's like playing tug-of-war and whatnot. It's the funniest thing to watch. And so neither one of them will ever have any fears about tarps or anything. They just
plastic bags and all that. Yeah, that is a phobia with horses. That's true. That's a great training. And I like how you said that you use the round pen as a pass-through so that you can do a catch pen if you need to. That's some smart thinking, too. Was it designed that way, or is this your thinking?
No, it was just the only place it could go because we're in the hills, so to speak. And we, mm-hmm. you know, our pastures are straight up and down almost, and mm-hmm. which is great for the horses because have you ever watched a horse come down a hill?
Yeah.
It's like a skier. You know, they go this way and that way. So they get about four times the movement coming down a hill than they ever would on the same piece of land flat.
Uh-huh.
And movement is what it's all about for us. And that's the way we put out the hay to keep them moving and that sort of thing. And then, of course, with the pasture, the water pond is on one far end and the best eating is on the other far end, about a half a mile away. And so it's, you know, just working.
Do you use that gator to feed? So that they...
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Do you? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's still living, too. That's boy, if I've ever had to say anything nice about a company, John Deere is it, because that thing is still going, and the service has been great on it, and we do the same thing here, just in lesser quantity, mm-hmm. At least in the summertime, it's lesser quantity, that we did on that video, the Paddock Paradise video that's on the Soul of a Horse channel on YouTube. Mm-hmm. We continue to put it out in little small piles as far away from the water as we can drive, mm-hmm. and we do about a bale a day for 8 horses in the summertime, and in wintertime it would crank up to about 4 bales a day, which mm-hmm. we're beginning to ease that way now. But yeah, we still put it out little piles at a time because that keeps them moving.
Moving, yeah.
It keeps
natural.
That herd dynamic, you know, the musical hay piles going.
That's right.
It's always, hey, wait a minute. If you're over there, I want it because there's something better in it.
Isn't that true?
And you know, and it's funny how some of them have, you know, learned that the easiest way to do this is to lure them into pushing, like Mariah does this all the time, pushing them up the hill. And as soon as they've all gotten on the line, on what we call the hay trail, then Mariah will circle back and go to the back end of the line and follow them up the hill so they'll leave her alone. Very smart.
Very
and
smart.
Mouse is that way. Mouse is, of course, you know Mouse, and Mouse is extremely smart. Have you seen the book trailer, by the way, on the new book?
I have, yes. Born Wild, sequel to the Soul of the Horse. And people should go on your website and see that, too. And
did you see that shot of Mouse in there?
I did. We'll have to have you on again, too, to tell the whole story of Mouse. Because that, for me, I know it was a chapter in your book, but it was a great example, I think, of how people can... I'd love to have you back for a tip too, Joe. I think you're a great example of how people can start from a little bit of knowledge and take a direction to help our horses and be with our horses. So if I can, I'd love to have you back. Are you available again?
I'd love to talk to you anyway.
Oh, you're sweet. So I'm going to ask people to go to the Soul of a Horse, thesoulofahorse.com, and see all your information there and get on your blog, get some of your books, and get to know Born Wild now just coming out, and get to know Joe and Kathleen and their family and their mission and their cause. And Joe, thank you for coming. Thank you for being with us. And we're going to have you back for that tip.
Well, I appreciate that, and I enjoyed being here very much.
So, you know, I didn't realize we didn't get to talk to him too much about Benji, but we heard the dogs barking in the background. I didn't realize that the Benji Films one had that did that well. I was kind of a kid, you know, almost when they started coming out. And I also didn't realize that Aunt B from Andy Griffith was in the first one. I didn't remember that.
I didn't either. Is that right, Glenn?
Yeah, she was in the first one. Yep.
I'll have to watch it again. How fun. And B, what a great trivia.
There, anybody over under 50 just didn't get that reference. But
good point.
Trust us, it's an old reference.
Yeah, it's wonderful, though. It was a wonderful time. Wonderful time. Here's a trivia, too. Did you know that Ron Howard, when he was 13, did a Lassie, actually a double Lassie episode with Monty Roberts?
Really?
Yeah. Speaking of Aunt B, right?
Was Monty in a Lassie episode?
He actually was producer of one and trained the cougar and the horses for it and everything. And I followed Ron Howard around like a little puppy, just watching everything he did. Of course, he was 13 and I was 12. And he had
puppy
hair.
Love.
No. It was wonderful.
Isn't that funny? So you've actually met Ron Howard.
Yeah, he sort might of. Not remember.
Sort of met Ron Howard.
That's right. But he's worked with Monty, and his dad was wonderful. You know, this is that whole era of, that's what Joe Camp comes out of, is that whole era of wonderful theatrical motion pictures, the real stories with animals and people, and, you know, and they were organically made, you know, they really.
Yeah, they didn't have computer effects back then.
So. Exactly right, yeah. And he really did train his dogs well. So that's some background information on Joe Camp.
Now, does Joe still have Benji offspring?
Yeah, he has. What he does is he finds new Benjis, and he just told me last week that the current Benji is blind and not hearing so well, but he gets them fairly aged. He really does keep them in his home, though, and treats them just, you know, I think the Benji he has right now is a rescue.
Well, you know, for those that don't know, Benji was kind of a, I don't know, he kind of looked like a, I don't know what he looked like. He was a mixed breed dog, but he was little. He was a little barky dog.
Little barky dog. Yeah, he's got a little lion face, you know, with the hair all poking out all sideways. And yeah, he was adorable.
You know, he was the opposite of Lassie. Lassie was regal and sort of, you know, all of that. And Benji was almost the opposite of Lassie that way.
You really know? True. She was elegant, right? Yeah. Yeah.
That's funny. Well, all right. Well, let's get on with the show here. And next up is what I'm finding out is everybody's favorite is horsemanship mailbag.
Oh, really? That's good to hear. Yeah, here we have another question about crossing water, crossing streams and things like that. So this one came from our forum on the Equus Online University, and people were out summer trail riding. And it says that they had a great time this year. Hope you can help me with this problem. My horse doesn't refuse to cross the streams or water, but he sure can jump them. She has in all caps. How can I train him to walk?
None of us have ever had that experience.
I know. Surprise.
I've had horses do that with the carriage, and that isn't much fun either.
Oh, that's true. That would be raucous. Train them through water instead of jumping to leap it. Yeah, or leaping in. So most places the water is no more than an ankle deep. Isn't that funny? He doesn't seem to be afraid of it, but sort of dainty about getting his feet wet. Another annoying development is that the other horses in our group are starting to do the same thing after us on the trail. Isn't that true? It's contagious, isn't it? Yeah. So this is a universal problem. Everybody's going to encounter this at one point or another, even if those horses, you know, go through water all the time. You go through a dry spell, they haven't seen water for a little bit, and for some reason, they think it's like maybe 10 feet deep. I don't know why, you know. You can see the bottom of the rocks, but they worry about that. So the first thing you want to do, reminds me of what Dad always says, is when you're working with a remedial problem, when you're doing your work right, repetition is your greatest friend. And when you're doing your work wrong, repetition is your greatest enemy, right? So we don't want to ingrain those habits and let them get carried away with this jumping or even refusing to cross. So the first thing we always ask people to do is to ground school their horse. They need to be listening to you about stopping, backing up, and moving forward. When you get those things so that they're really tuned for you on the ground,
then go create yourself a water obstacle if you don't have one around. You know, get your hose out. But if you've got water puddles or something that you can maneuver around then at home, then you're set. So what you want to do is stay safe while you're approaching the water, but be prepared in case your horse has a tendency to jump. You want to know where he's going to jump. So you want to keep him in your eye at all times, but you don't want to be turned around looking at him either, because that we know in their vernacular means go away. So it's a good idea to walk your horse through the water a lot of times and then increase the size of the obstacle, then go back and forth through it too. Again, repeating a good issue and not repeating letting them get away with something all the time too. It's an interesting thing too if you try to take your horse and back him through because that means he really has to be listening to you. So if you get really good at going forward, see if you can back him through that obstacle as well. So now once you have your horse walking and backing through the water and you're confident with that, the next step, if you want to do a phase in between getting up in the saddle, is to pony your horse from another horse. Get a nice quiet gelding that they've been around before, preferably, and just ask your horse to, you know, the gelding will be just really disappointed if that horse starts fussing around and they start schooling on them themselves and you don't have to do much up there. So that's a nice in-between if you're a little worried about jumping or feeling dangerous about being in the saddle. And then once you've accomplished that, you can get up in the saddle and make sure that you've asked him to do it correctly every time you go through the water. Again, you can start with just a little bit and grow your obstacle so that you incrementally, which is the most important thing to remember, train him to do what you're asking him to do. Be safe.
Very good. Well, thank you, Debbie. And now it is time for...
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Yeah. Move out. Move
Where in the world is Monty Roberts?
Monty is looking forward to meeting some new friends, two-legged and four-legged, in Hart Prairie College, October 25, Crofton Manor, October 30. November 1, he'll be at the Grange in Okehampton, UK. November 30 through December 1, now he takes a plane and he goes to Brazil. And he's going to be just outside of Sao Paulo. And also on the weekend of December 7, 8, he's going to be doing a horse training workshop in Sao Paulo. All of these you can find on MontyRoberts.com on his calendar page. And some special things that will require probably that you want to pick up the phone is on January 25, 2014 now, we have a night of inspiration with Monty at Flag Is Up Farms. Monty and Pat put on a big shebang. We do join up and barbecues, and it's really fun. And January 26th, we're going to do a more in-depth workshop called Life Lessons. We just added that, Glenn. It's a personal development workshop, and it's based on the life lessons from the original autobiography, The Man Who Listens to Horses. So the phone number to call is 805-688-6288. Put a 1 in front of it if you're international. That's 1-805-688-6288.
So what do we do? So, put people who aren't broke yet in a round pen and do join up? Is that what we... trying to accomplish
teenagers. Yeah. We take teenagers, we put little halters on them.
Hey, if you can figure that one out, you're gonna make millions. Forget horses.
That's right. They're next.
Yeah. Throw the horse thing out the window if you figure that one out.
I tell you, this is such a fun, it's like a girlfriend's weekend, or, you know, if you're training on your husband, bring him, you know, that's okay too. But life lessons. It is a lot of fun though. And what we did was we gleaned little messages that dad didn't even think of when he was writing the book, The Man Who Listens, because it's his autobiography. So he just, you know, purged information on the paper. But when we went back and looked at it, there's actually a little resonating lesson in each one. So I think people are going to have fun. It's our first. So people will have to tell us whether it's fun.
And that'll be at your beautiful farm there in California as well?
It's a great escape anyway, isn't it? Yes, right in there in Central California, just outside of Santa Barbara County. It's beautiful. And we do the
barbecue up on the evening icebreaker overlooking the 80 acres. You know, that hasn't changed since 1966. The zoning is so hard in Santa Barbara.
Yeah, right.
Get around.
You're not allowed to change anything.
It's exactly right. It's practically as nature intended. So it is beautiful. It's a beautiful location. And, you add that it's wine country and you have a wonderful evening.
You're not too far from the ocean either, are you?
No, we're about 25 minutes. Actually, the ocean is only 15 minutes. We're about 25 minutes from Santa Barbara. So what you do is you slip through the Gaviota Pass there from the valley that we live in, and you're right on top of the ocean. This beautiful area is called Hollister Ranch. You know, the Hollister surfing kind of came out of all that area. They call it the Mediterranean of Southern California because it's just a beautiful feel like that too, with the tile roofs, and it's a beautiful area. People should come visit.
Would you ever want to live anywhere outside of California?
I don't know why I would. No.
Lower taxes, maybe? That'd be the only reason.
Well, I like that about Florida. You're right, Glenn. You got.
Yeah, we don't have state taxes here, which is one of the reasons we moved to Florida, actually.
Yes, it's a good idea. There's only a few states in the United States I know that do that, and California is
not one of them.
By far. So I'd like to tell everybody the details about today's show. So if you go to horsemanshipradio.com, you can find links and photos and more information about our guests. Please do support them as well. Please support our sponsors. As always, we love your feedback. And if you'll follow us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/Monty Roberts and Twitter at twitter.com/Monty_Roberts. I want to again thank our sponsors. Be sure to visit all the other great shows too at Horse Radio Network, www.horseradionetwork.com. And until next time, have many happy horse hours.
Hey Blaze Kids Radio listeners, thanks for tuning in. We've got episode 5 brought to you by Blaze Kids Magazine and part of the Horse Radio Network. Please support our sponsors as they make this show possible. And our sponsors are Schleich and the AQHA. This is Jeff.
And this is Jessica, and you're listening to Blaze Kids Radio.
Well, hi, Jessica. How are things going?
Going pretty good. How about you?
Very well. Such a nice time of year here in the fall. Our horses are happy. Blaze is getting her nice coat on. How about Jasper? What's Jasper doing?
Well, he's getting fatter and fatter.
Getting ready for winter, or is he overfed?
He's getting ready for winter, all right. And I don't know what it is, but he's definitely getting fatter.
Yeah, I think that's probably just pony fat, maybe, or baby fat. I got to ask you one question as we're getting close to Halloween. What's he going out as this year? What's Jasper's costume?
A shark.
A shark. Yeah. And how about his friends? Are they a school of sharks, or...
No, just Jasper the shark. We couldn't find one for Marty.
Oh, that'll be fun. Jessica and I have another fun fact-filled show for you this time. Our Did You Know segment is kind of touchy-feely this episode, you might say. Jessica and I have studied up on horses' sense of touch and learned some really interesting things. Our Horses in the News segment is back this issue with Mary Kate Olson's horse, Marvelous, and news about Sovereign, Britain's biggest horse. And we're bringing a little magic to the show this time, too. Therapy Horse Magic from Gentle Carousel has been named Most Heroic Pet in America. He's a busy blue-eyed miniature horse that spreads joy in nursing homes and hospitals and schools. And Gentle Carousel volunteer Debbie Garcia Bengoche is with us today to tell us more about Magic and all the great things that he does. And, of course, our good friend Carly is back to take you back in time to the year 1870 in St. Louis, Missouri, in fact, with a story about Lady Fair, a magnificent saddlebred mare that brought two little girls and their families together in a most heartwarming way. That's all coming up, but first a message from one of our sponsors.
Hi, I'm Kelsey, and I like Schlage. Actually, I work at Schlage, where we make wonderful toy figurines, like the horses with braided manes. There are just so many to choose from. Did you know that each one is hand-painted? That's why they all look so great. Each one is special because it's so unique. Check out the beautiful Le Faisaner Mare with a French braid, or the ornately braided Fell Pony Stallion. Oh, and what about the lovely Halfinger or Shire Mare? It's just so hard to decide who to play with, so I'll include them all. You can too. Just go to your local toy store or ask a parent to help you go online to schlage-s.com to find a store near you. You can also look at all of the other horses we make and even download cool apps or other fun activities. Don't forget to look in your Blaze magazine for the test to find out which Schlage horse is best for you and for our beautiful braids photo contest where you could win $50 worth of braided manes horses from Schlage. Playing with Schlage horses is the best. Until next time, have fun horsing around.
And now for some horsey headlines with horses in the news. And let's start with Mary Kate Olson's Marvelous. Remember Mary Kate from Mary Kate and Ashley fame? Well, she has not only gone from actress to fashion mogul, but she has award-winning horses, too. Her horse, Marvelous, crushed the competition at the local hunter sections at the 38th annual Hampton Classic Horse Show. Way to go, Mary Kate. Jessica, over to you and Sovereign the Big.
Big is right, and still growing. Four-year-old Shire horse named Sovereign is so big, his owners don't have a saddle that fits him. He's Britain's biggest horse right now and is still growing at 20 hands, 2 inches high. Sovereign will need to grow another inch to take the world tallest horse title from Big Jake. 20 hands, 2 3/4 inches tall.
That is really big news. In other news, if you're looking to learn more about your favorite topics like horse showing, training, health, riding, and breeding, trot on over to American Quarter Horse Association's YouTube channel. They have some great videos in this online classroom. Go to, and here's the website address, www.youtube.com/user/AQHA video. So youtube.com/user/AQHA video. And while you're online, learn about horse anatomy from Blaze Magazine's Pinterest Pick of the Month, which shows you how magnificent horses are on the inside, too. And there are a lot of other fabulous horsey photos for you there as well. So visit www.pinterest.com/Blaze Magazine. More horsey headlines coming your way as they happen in future episodes of Horses in the News on Blaze Kids Radio. And now it's time to go back in time with our Once Upon a Horse story. Carly is back with us again to tell us a tale about a very special mare named Lady Fair, who brought two very different dads together to the delight of their horse-loving little girls.
There once lived a horse named Lady Fair. In the year 1870, in St. Louis, Missouri, there once lived a horse named Lady Fair. Lady Fair was a beautiful Bay American saddlebred mare. Her coat was deep brown. It looked like rich milk chocolate. She was a prize show horse, preparing to perform at the world-famous St. Louis Fair. She paced back and forth in her stall, waiting for her young girl to come to brush her. "Oh, Lady Fair," the girl cried as she rushed into the stall. "I'm so sad." Lady Fair didn't understand. She lowered her head and rubbed her nose on the girl's cheek. Lady thought her girl was so beautiful. Her skin was a lovely dark color, just like her own. She nibbled on her braids so she would smile. The girl smiled, but said sadly, Someone is here to buy you. Your owner needs the money. My daddy has trained you so well that your owner can get a good price for you. Old lady, I don't know what I'll do without you. It's been hard on my family living with your owner, but I don't want to be away from you. Just then, her daddy came up and said, It's time. Come on, baby. I've got to take Lady into the ring. The girl hung her head, tears streaming down her cheeks. I don't want to see her go, she sniffled. Everything will be okay, baby, her dad said with a wink. You'll see. The girl just couldn't watch her fair lady go. She just sat in the stall and cried. Why are you crying? A little voice said. She lifted her head to see another girl about her age standing there. The girl had braids in her hair too, only hers were blonde. I have to be apart from the most beautiful horse in the world. She's being sold today. Why? The other girl asked. It's a long story, she answered. When I was born, my mama and daddy were slaves. A rich man who raised American saddlebreds owned us. My daddy is the best horse trainer around. The other girl listened silently. After the Civil War ended, we were free to leave, but we didn't have money or anywhere else to go, and Daddy didn't want to leave all the wonderful horses he trained. The owner didn't want to lose Daddy as his trainer either. He let us stay for free, but doesn't pay Daddy anything. Now the owner has run out of money and has to sell all his horses. I know about saddlebreds, said the other girl. Did you know that the famous war generals rode saddlebreds? General Grant's horse from the Union Army was named Cincinnati. General Lee's horse in the Confederate Army was named Traveler, she recited. Papa said saddlebreds have the most wonderful gaits and are very smooth to ride over long distances. He said that we're going to get some to raise, train, and show. Just then, the girl's fathers walked in with Lady Fair. They shook hands. Do we have a deal then? The blonde girl's papa asked. Girls, I've just bought the best saddlebred horses around, but I'm not taking them unless their trainer comes with them. I will pay him whatever he wants, he said, looking to the little girl's daddy. I want your family to move with the horses to Kentucky with us, he asked. What do you say? The girls held hands and held their breath, waiting for the answer. We would love to, he answered. The girls squealed with delight. They ran to Lady Fair and hugged her. The new friends wrapped their arms around her neck and around each other. Lady Fair nibbled on the girls' braids, making them smile.
We're so excited to bring a little magic to the show this time. Joining us is a very busy volunteer from Gentle Carousel, Debbie, who will tell us more about Therapy Horse Magic, the most heroic pet in America, and all the great things that he and other Gentle Carousel horses do. Welcome, Debbie.
Thank you. We're so happy to be here.
We are happy to have you too. So you're with Jessica and I, and Jessica and I talk often about Jasper, who is her miniature horse. So I think you two have a whole lot in common, and I'll kind of get us going with the first question, but I know Jessica has a whole list for you. So before we kind of get into magic and you telling us about all that he does, the great things that he does, tell us about Gentle Carousel and what the organization is all about.
Well, Gentle Carousel Miniature Therapy Horses is an all-volunteer charity, and we have a team of 27 little therapy horses, and they work with about 25,000 people each year inside hospitals, hospice programs, and especially with families who've experienced traumatic events. So like this year, they have been everywhere across the country. They were working with children and first responders at Sandy Hook Elementary School. They were asked by the community to come up there. They've worked with child trafficking victims in Washington, D.C. They were out with the tornado survivors in Moore, Oklahoma, and really in children's hospitals across the country.
That's like really special to be able to do that, isn't it?
Well, you know, it's amazing because they just seem to bring their love. I mean, there are programs, wonderful programs, where people go to horses for therapy, but to have horses that are able to go to people who wouldn't otherwise be around horses or be able to see horses, that is really magical for us, to be able to see the expression on a child's face when a horse walks into their hospital room. It's something to see.
And Debbie, what do the horses do? Do they get petted? Do they go for walks with some of the folks that you introduce them to? What is their routine?
You know, every visit is a little bit different, you know, depending on the situation and things like that. But they do everything from, you know, our horses train basically at a hospital here in Florida. And we have programs in Florida and Nashville and then starting over in Greece. But they train at a hospital here in Florida, and they are actually part of the treatment team here. So they work with the occupational therapist, the physical therapist, the speech therapist. They go in, and they're actually working with the patients. In some cases, with this particular hospital that works with burn victims and spinal cord injuries, they actually show the patients how to go up and down the stairs. They work with them in their wheelchairs. We've had people that have reached out their arms for the first time, you know, just to touch the horses. So they're actually an active part of the treatment program in some cases. In other cases, like going to Sandy Hook Elementary School, the town sets up, or the community sets up, what they want us to do. So the horses did everything from working with first responders. They were able to go right into the police station, actually into the interrogation room, and have private time with the law enforcement officers that were there. They work in libraries, they work in schools. So, you know, every situation is a little bit different, but we do call on them to really handle some pretty interesting and sometimes very tough situations.
So, like, how are they trained to go into these situations in hospital?
Well, we're fortunate that we have, you know, a one-of-a-kind program here. So the horses go through about a 2-year training program. And they need to learn to walk up and down stairs, ride in elevators, work around hospital equipment, handle big sounds like ambulances and actually hospital helicopters and things like that. So the last 6 months of their training, they actually work in a hospital setting. And the patients work with the horses, so the patients feel great because they feel like they're giving and helping and making a difference. And at the same time, the horses are able to help the patients. So it's a pretty extensive training program that they go through. So by the time they go in the door and go into a hospital, they've really handled, you know, a lot of different hospital situations already. And yes, they're house trained, because that's our most asked question.
That one right there, are they house trained?
That's the one.
How do you train that, or what does that mean, house trained? They hold it until you take them out, like a dog?
It's like a dog.
Yeah.
So the training is sort of like a puppy times a thousand, but they ask to be able to go out to the bathroom. They know they're not supposed to go to the bathroom indoors.
So when do you actually train them in your own house?
Well, I mean, they do come inside our house. I mean, we have a great training place for them, that we have things set up and places for them to work and train, and they do train inside the hospitals. So, you know, they definitely do a lot of indoor work. And we try to bring them inside as soon as they're born. And fortunately, right now we're in multiple generations of therapy horses, so we have foals that actually go into the hospitals as babies now with their moms. So they are so accustomed to being indoors and being around hospital sounds that the level of what they're able to handle is so much more than when we started 15 years ago. So we had a little foal that was born here the same day as the prince in England. He was born at the same day and the same time. And his name is Silver Sovereign, and the kids call him the Little Prince. And he was only 14 inches tall when he was born, which is pretty tiny. And he's snow white with blue eyes. And he's been going into hospitals really since he was 10 days old. He was inside the house with us. He went with his mom to the hospital that's right nearby to visit a couple of children in a special situation. And he's been working with his mom inside hospitals ever since he was tiny. And he's amazing and completely fearless. And in fact, a couple of weeks ago, he was on stage in Nashville at the Franklin Theater and got a standing ovation and came out, and the audience all stood up, and It was all the lights and the you know, all the instruments and everything on stage, and he was completely unbothered by all of it, as just really only a 3-month-old foal. So he's going to be special, and he's really, really fearless and amazing and super tiny and adorable. But, you know, we start with them being indoors at our house as soon as they're born.
That really is incredible at that age to be not frightened, which is a horse's natural instinct for flight.
It is.
Yeah.
And, you know, people with this program go, oh, well, that's like therapy dogs. But it's really nothing like a therapy dog, because having a horse going up and down stairs is very different than a dog going up and down stairs. And they are herd animals.
That's right.
And, you know, it is a totally different way of working with them. And we're very, very careful, and we never forget that they are horses. And in the times that they are not working, and they only work 2 days a week, individual horses, they are with their little herds. They live a very natural life. They are much happier to have little horse friends. So we're very, very aware that even though we're asking them to do something that's very unhorse-like and very unusual, we always keep in mind that these are horses in every way, even though they're very small.
Yeah, well, it sounds like they're real stars and real incredible horses. And I think one of the stars of your Gentle Carousel herd is Magic, that we've heard so much about. And Jessica introduced me to Magic over the phone one day when we were talking about Minnie. So, Jessica, I'll turn it back to you to ask Debbie about Magic and the summer.
So how did Magic come to be most heroic pet in America?
Well, Magic's a pretty amazing horse, and she just seems to be the horse that's at the right place at the right time. She was with someone who woke up from a coma. She was with a woman who hadn't spoken in years at an assisted living program. No one there had ever heard her speak, and Magic went over to her and put her head in her lap, and the woman started laughing because she was so surprised to see a horse indoors, and she said, "It's a horse. It's beautiful." And the staff all started crying because they'd never heard her speak before. And they told her they loved her, and she said, "I love you too." And she's talked ever since to her family, to the staff that's there. But Magic is just kind of the horse that we can count on in really, really challenging situations. She was one of the team of horses that we took up to Sandy Hook Elementary School. And if there was a situation that would come up, like the town would tell us each day where they wanted us to be. And one day they said, "We want you to just be at the library, and nobody has been there since the tragedy. And maybe you'll just have one or two kids, but that's so, you know, that was fine with us." And so we took Magic there, and 600 people showed up to see her. And it was the first time we were told that many of them had even seen each other since the tragedy. And she handled, you know, what we thought was going to be just a couple of children, she handled 600 people that afternoon and allowed them to hug her and talk with her. And the kids shared their stories with her and what they'd seen and what they'd been through. And she was just truly amazing. And the next day, the same thing, we were supposed to be at a gymnasium, and there were only going to be a few people there, and it was just for the Sandy Hook families. And they waited in line for 4 hours to meet her and be with her. And you know, again, she's just the kind of horse that if there's a situation that's really, really challenging, we took her and her best friend Hamlet out to Oklahoma to be with the children who'd been trapped in the school by the schools by the tornado when it hit out there. And, you know, she was meeting with the children. And actually, while we were there, we were hit by the biggest tornado in U.S. history. We had to flee the tornado about 2 minutes ahead of the storm. I mean, it was a 2.5-mile-wide tornado that hit the same place again. And fortunately, we have a camera in our trailer. And as we were trying to get away, we were looking in the trailer, and there were the sirens were going, and I mean, it was so loud, and the tornado, and Magic was eating, and so was Hamlet. They were so unafraid because they were so used to ambulance sounds and all the things. They just thought we were, you know, doing something. They were totally fearless with that whole thing. But I think Magic has just been really, really special that way. She just means a lot to children who are in hospitals. We had one little boy who was losing his eyesight because of a brain tumor, and he wanted to be with Magic one more time because he said he didn't want to forget what she looked like. And she just put her forehead on his forehead, and they just stayed there with each other. And he said, it's like she can see inside my soul. And wow, that's kind of the feeling that children, you know, get with Magic. And honestly, all of our horses, there are 27. Each of them have their own special friends, their special fans. They all have their own stories. But Magic does seem to be that one horse that is at the right place at the right time.
Yeah. And when we met, you told me about another horse named Catherine, which has a really kind of heartfelt or heartwarming story to her name, her namesake even. You want to tell us about that?
Yeah, Catherine is actually Magic's sister. And when we were up in Sandy Hook, we met a number of the families who had been affected, you know, by the tragedy there. And one of the families was the family of Catherine Hubbard. And she loved horses. She rode horses. Horses were her life. And she was just known for really loving animals and being kind to animals. And she was lost at Sandy Hook Elementary School. And we happened to have a foal that was born that had not been named yet. And it had red hair and freckles on its face, just like Catherine Hubbard did. And so in talking with her family, the foal was named after Catherine Hubbard and has since made a visit up to Sandy Hook with Magic. But the children there were watching her training for the next 2 years, and it meant a lot to the family that little Catherine the horse would be out working with children in schools and in hospitals. So that's the namesake for Catherine Hubbard. And when we have a literacy program that focuses on at-risk readers, but we also visit libraries with the horses. And when Catherine visits, we always have all the children in the audience promise that they'll always be kind of animals, just like Catherine Hubbard. And they all raise their hand and pledge to Catherine, the horse, that they'll always be kind to animals.
Hey, y'all, the American Quarter Horse Association rewards members for riding their horses. You heard me right. Rewards for just riding your horse, any breed, anywhere. Join the AQHA Horseback Riding Program today to start earning prizes from the AQHA's corporate partners just for spending time in the saddle. Visit them at AQHA.org to sign up today. That's AQHA.org.
Jessica and I have done our homework on horsey touch for this episode's Did You Know segment. We learned some really interesting things about horses' sensitive skin. Horses can be a little touchy, you might say. So let's touch on it a little bit, Jessica. If we were talking about our own five senses as we know them, sight, smell, touch, sound, and taste, question for you, Jessica, which do you think is our weakest sense?
Smell, I'd say.
And you are right. You know, although some kids making their first visit to a farm might disagree, you're right, it is our weakest sense. In horses, though, touch is often thought to be their weakest sense, right?
Right. And in one way, this is true. Horses are prey animals. A keen sense of touch is not going to save them from the neighbor's mountain lion. If the predator is close enough for the horse to feel it on their skin, well, you know what? Hopefully their keen sense of sight, smell, and hearing sent them galloping away long before Mr. Lion ever got close.
Yeah, that's right. But in another way, as you and I found out, touch is not necessarily their weakest sense. Horses rely on touch for something else. When it comes to getting to know one another, communicating with one another, touch is very important to them, and the horse's skin tells them a lot about the world around them.
That's right. Skin so soft, you might say. Horses are pretty thin skin. Their skin is tougher than ours, but it's full of nerve endings that are very sensitive to pressure and pain, just like us. But did you know that not all parts of their body are as sensitive as others?
I didn't until we did our homework this week. Here's what I learned. Mostly because of differences in the thickness of their coat and skin, different areas are more ticklish, you might say. just like us, or most of us, around our rib cage. The crest of their neck, that's the part where the mane grows out of, and the top of their tail, are some of the thickest parts of the skin. So the most perceptive or sensitive areas are around the eyes and ears and nose. So I know from here at Blaze Farm, when we're watching Blaze's skin twitch in the summertime when every little fly lands on her back, it's really amazing to think about what's really happening with her skin.
Yeah, that can be terrific for them, or it could be torture.
that's right. Let's stick with the terrific part. I know that horses prefer to be stroked rather than patted, but how do you know if he or she likes to be touched at all?
I think if you have a horse, you know. It doesn't take long to learn where your horse wants to be rubbed or scratched, because most times they'll move under your hand.
I think you're right. The horse will tell you, won't he? Or she. Okay, quick quiz for you, Jessica. Which part of a horse is most like our fingers?
Easy one, lips. Here's why. A horse's upper lip is really sensitive and helps him or her learn about objects in their world. Like stall door latches.
Like stall door latches is right. We have a real escape artist here on our farm. Blaze's pal, Hank, figured out a long time ago that little hatch is the only thing standing in his way to the feed bin. So we've had to take some other measures to keep him in his stall at night. But here's something else I found really interesting, too. And it's about why horses nose around like they do. The whiskers that grow from their muzzle and around the eyes are like an insect's antenna. So when the horse is nosing around, their whiskers give them really good information about distance and texture of an object, especially when it's dark, kind of like a cat or a mouse uses their whiskers. Anything else that you've got to report on this touchy topic, Jessica?
I found it really interesting that touch for horses is kind of language for them. It's one way that they talk to each other. For instance, mares reassure their babies by brushing their muzzle up against them, or when their friends scratch each other's itches with their teeth.
And one more, too. When a horse needs to send a strong message, the threat of an unpleasant touch sometimes is part of that conversation. You know, but we can speak their language, too. A gentle rub on their shoulder is like saying, "I'm your friend." And sometimes horses will even try to send that message back to us. And then you know you've got a real friend and a real bond with your horse. So great information, Jessica. Great job. How about this for our homework for next episode? Let's stick with the horses are sensational theme. And let's do another sense next week. Your choice. How about smell or taste?
Let's do taste.
Taste it is, then. And a fine choice. Our new issue of Blaze Magazine has a fun story called Tasty Treats World Tour, where we found out about some really unusual horse treats in other parts of the world, like coconut meat in the Philippines and salted herring fish in Iceland. So, hey, Blaze Kids Radio listeners, we will tell you all about it next time on Did You Know? For details about today's show, go to www.blazekidsradio.com, where you can find links and photos and more information about our guests today and some of the other topics that we shared. As always, we love your feedback. Please follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Blaze Kids Mag. And you can subscribe to Blaze Kids Magazine at www.blazekids.com. Many thanks to our sponsors, Schleich and AQHA, and be sure to visit all of the other great shows on the Horse Radio Network at www.horseradionetwork.com. Jessica, everybody wants to keep up with Jasper. What's your Facebook?
Well, if you want to keep up with me and Jasper, my Facebook is Just Blaze Kids Radio. And until next time, keep on blazing those trails.